Hello to everyone this week, and welcome to episode 82 of Bite-Sized Blessings. This week, I get to interview Cameron Fuller, and this is how I met Cameron. I just bought my house in Portland, and it was spring. I was going outside to look at all the yard work I needed to do and realized it was so very much yard work. I was so grumpy and having the worst day, and I'd heard rumors about this neighbor who was just one or two doors down from me, but knew everyone, who was friends with everyone, and I saw her approaching with this little baby in her arms. And I was looking around the yard. I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do. I looked down, the neighbor's slowly walking towards me, and I'm thinking in my mind, do not walk towards me. Do not walk towards me. I'm too grumpy. I'm having a bad day. And then I'd look over, glance over, and yep, like the Terminator, she was still coming, holding this baby, walking towards me. And I thought, you know, at some point, there's just this, you know, you have to give up and you have to go with the flow and you have to say, okay, I guess we're going to meet today. And that's when I met Cam. Cam was the baby. Cam would come over all the time. When she was 3, 4, 5, she'd sit in my yard. We'd have conversations. She was absolutely the brightest child I'd ever talked to. She loved being around adults, was able to have deep conversations, meaningful conversation, fun conversation. And now she's in her 20s. And I cannot believe that I have known this human being for so long. So our talk today is a little interesting. There are several different kinds of magical occurrences that have happened in Cam's life. And I'm sure this is just the tip of the iceberg, right? Because sometimes when I talk to my guests, I realize they have so many more stories they could share, but this podcast can only be so long. Cam shares 2 or 3 of her stories, and they're all a little bit different. But really, for me, the miracle is that I've known this human for so very long, that we've stayed very best friends, that we love each other dearly, deeply, and I've gotten to see her grow up into a wise, intelligent, compassionate human being who is absolutely going to change the world for the better. I'm so very grateful that she's in my life, and I'm so very grateful that her mother kept coming, like the Terminator on that day, because I have a deep friendship and almost a family connection with her family. So that's my introduction. And now, episode 82 of Bite-Sized Blessings.
Then I had a major surgery following that a year later. I don't know what it was, but while I was having the surgery, I saw him and I got to have a conversation with him. And I was able to talk and tell him how I felt and talk about, you know, our relationship and how much it meant to me, and apologize for downplaying it and, you know, tell him that even though he's gone, I'll always remember him and hold him close as a friend. And I'll never downplay our relationship like that again, no matter what other people want or want to hear. And as I was coming out of anesthesia, I could see him standing next to me. And I knew it wasn't going to last very long, but it was just incredible to be able to have that connection and say what I needed to say and really felt like he heard me. Well, I always start with that I'm an animal lover. I love all animals. If I was more, you know, geared towards farm life, I'd have like one, I'd have a Noah's Ark of 2 of every animal on the planet. But I'm a city girl and you can't do that in the city. I have a lot of friends that do D&D. And so I always describe myself as someone who's chaotic neutral. In Dungeons and Dragons, all the characters, they have like lawful good, who's someone who is like a rule follower and their goals that they try to achieve are for the greater good. And then there's lawful neutral, who are law-abiding citizens who, like, you know, follow the rules, but they don't necessarily do things for the good of people or for the, you know. And then there's lawful evil. And so a lot of like villains, like if you were to describe the Sheriff of Nottingham in the Robin Hood books, he'd be lawful evil. So he's the villain, but he implements the law. And then there's chaotic good, which means you're kind of spazzy and like chaos and function well in chaos, but your chaos is for the greater good of people. Then there's chaotic neutral, which is me, which you do some things that are good, but you also do some things that aren't good. And then there's chaotic evil, where you're chaos, but which is a lot of like Disney villains, where they're chaotic, but therefore nefarious purposes.
That's amazing.
So yes, I do things that are for the good and I do things that are for the not good. But
this is the first
time they kind of balance out.
Got it. This is the first time I've ever had someone describe themselves with this particular question using a D&D reference. So thanks for that.
One of my parents grew up in a devoutly Catholic household and the other one grew up in a, you know, anti-religion household. But both of them had somewhat negative experiences growing up with with different parts of religion. And so they were both dedicated to making sure that me and my brother grew up without any religion pretty much influencing our lives at all. I can count on one hand the number of times I've stepped foot in a church. People will be talking about, you know, religious matters and theology, and I'll have absolutely no idea what they're talking about. And as an adult, you know, there's so much reference to religion, even different religions all through society. And I found myself to be very ignorant of a lot of those matters, which in some ways has been really good. And in some ways it's been, I wish they had educated me a little bit more about religion. I think they made the right decision keeping religion out of our upbringing. And so I know very little about religion. And it's more just, we embrace some of the things that a lot of religions embrace, which is, you know, being kind to others, being forgiving. I feel a lot of people also seek out religion for a community. And we found community in other ways. Growing up, my parents had their lesbian friend group community that we spent a lot of time with. Every week for 12 years, we had a group gathering on one of the days of the week, and it was just a potluck with, you know, sometimes between 5 and 20 families. The neighborhood, both my parents have always been very active in the neighborhood and the neighbors, and it's just finding community that way. I did a lot of theater and figure skating and sports. And so they found community in the parents of the people that, you know, of the kids that I interacted with. We found community in ways outside of religion. And I feel like we had kind of more of a diverse community that when it wasn't based strictly on religion, politics and religion were never a topic. I mean, one of the things, I don't know if it's a miracle or just part of that spiritual connection that connects the world, but there have been multiple times where, you know, I'll think of a friend that I haven't talked to in a couple years. We haven't been real close. Our paths haven't crossed in a long time. And I'll think, I should reach out to this person and just see how they're doing. And on more than one occasion, that person has said, oh, I was just thinking of you, or I'm so glad you reached out because I was in a really bad space. And you are someone who always helps me out of those spaces. And I'm like, something in me was telling me that I needed to contact these people. And there seemed to be a reason for it. At the beginning of the pandemic, I lost a really close friend of mine. We'd been in a show together and he was a lot older than I was. And we had a connection based through that show. And so we became really close. And I felt because he was so much older than me that a lot of people didn't approve of our friendship or the relationship we had. So I found myself downplaying our relationship to a lot of people to suit their expectations of what it should be or what it should look like. And he passed away suddenly from COVID. That was really hard for me, especially since he was living in California and I was living here and I just had a surgery and like he was wanting to come visit, wanted to make sure my parents were comfortable with it first. And it was an awkward relationship in navigating what other people expected from us and what they wanted us to be or not be. And so for months afterwards, I felt really guilty for having allowed other people's expectations and their judgment to influence how I felt about him and how I talked about him. He was one of my closest friends. I could talk to him about anything. We would text all night long or talk on the phone all night long, but we were never tired. And, you know, we would text all the next day and we never ran out of things to talk about. It was just one of those people where there will never be another person like them in my life. That connection was so special and so unique. And so I felt really bad about it. And I had never gotten the opportunity to apologize. I mean, I'm not even sure he knew how much I downplayed our relationship, but I knew. He was unapologetic about who he was as a person and putting himself out there. He was a musical therapist and he wrote songs for me. And I'd never had someone do that before. And I'm a very private person. And so, you know, if I'm dating someone or if I'm friends with someone, I don't do a lot of flashy friendships. But, you know, we were in a show together. So he would come to rehearsal where he'd be practicing the songs for me. And so everybody knew, and I hated that everybody knew. I also loved how much he didn't care who knew that, you know, he thought I was incredibly special. A lot of the people we were working with were very young and very immature and hadn't done a lot of shows. And he'd done a lot of shows. So he had a lot of professional experience as a musician. And I had a lot of professional experience through theater. And so both of us were kind of over the immaturity of a lot of the people in the cast. It was a community college theater. So you're going to get a lot of people who are exploring theater. And that's good. That's exactly what it should be. There are still going to be frustrations with other cast members. But then, you know, he and I and our group would go out after rehearsal and spend a lot of time together. And we just got really close. Then I had a major surgery following that. A year later, I don't know what it was, but while I was having the surgery, I saw him and I got to have a conversation with him. And I was able to talk and tell him how I felt and, you know, talk about, you know, our relationship and how much it meant to me and apologize for downplaying it and, you know, tell him that even though he's gone, I'll always remember him and hold him close as a friend. And I'll never downplay our relationship like that again, no matter what other people want or want to hear. And as I was coming out of anesthesia, I could see him standing next to me. And I knew it wasn't going to last very long, but it was just incredible to be able to have that connection and say what I needed to say and really felt like he heard me.
Were you surprised to see him when he showed up?
I was. I was afraid that he would be mad at me and not want to talk to me, or I was afraid that he wouldn't be there because maybe there isn't anything there. Who really knows if there's an afterlife or if people linger?
Do you think he specifically came to you to give you the space to apologize?
I hope so. And I hope that he just wanted to see me again. I was really sad to see him because I knew that he wasn't still here on Earth. But I was also, because his death was so sudden, you know, I'd been talking to him the day before he died. You know, at first when someone told me that he had passed away, I thought it was a joke. And so being able to get that closure was something that I'll never forget and something that I really needed. And I think that in some way the universe knew that and allowed me to see him again. And he wasn't mad, as I didn't think he would be, because that just wasn't who he was as a person. And he understood. I mean, he understood why. And we were able to move on together, I feel like.
I mean, and it sounds like you could still see him when you were waking up from anesthesia. Mm-hmm. And were you like, please don't go?
I was, yeah. But I mean, I knew he was going to go, but I was still talking to him. And there was a nurse next to me who thought I was talking to her. And I was like, go away. I need to hold on to this conversation and connection as long as I can.
Everybody's different in this world. And sometimes you just find this really good fit with like personality or emotions or, you know, whatever it is, it's different. Like humans interact with each other, you know, in different ways and find connections in different ways. And there's no explanation for it. Mm-hmm. It can be, the age can be very different. The, like, who knows, but for some reason it just clicks.
Yeah.
And those people are precious.
They are. There will never be someone in my life like him again.
When you have those relationships, when you have those experiences, you're like, treasure them.
Right.
They're so precious.
But I've also never been afraid of having friends that are, I mean, the age range of the friends in my life range from, you know, 15 to 60, because I just connect with a lot of people. And especially as a kid, I connected a lot more with people older than me. You know, some people think it's weird that I'm like, yeah, I'd say about 40% of my friends are people that are much older than me or closer to my parents' age.
Well, your parents are ancient, so.
I have been studying criminal justice as my major since I started school. And I got into school for criminal justice, and I have about 16 months left of school before I walk away from school with a bachelor's in criminal justice. And I'm like, you know, I've always known what I wanted to do. I wanted to work with human trafficking victims on an investigative side. I'd been really set on this for years, and I'd been talking since I was a kid about being an investigator and going to school in criminal justice. But I've also spent a lot of time in the medical field. I've spent a lot of time at hospitals. I've spent a lot of time with doctors. We have a lot of nursing friends. I find myself in the medical profession a lot. You know, we have a lot of friends who are nurses. So I always thought, you know, if at any point I'm not happy with the way my life is going, or I want to make a change, I'll go to nursing school for a couple of years and I'll become a nurse. And that was just always on the back burner. So I would have a fallback if things didn't work out or I wasn't happy. And I had a surgery in May. I ended up spending 2 weeks in the hospital, and I got to know all the nurses really, really well. You know, I would talk to them on their rounds. I asked them how they became nurses. I asked what drove them to become nurses, how long they'd been in nursing. And after I left the hospital, I had this inkling feeling that I wanted to go to nursing school and I wanted to change career paths and become a nurse. I was like, but I'm so close to being done. And I've been telling people my whole life that I'm doing criminal justice. And I'm like, are my parents going to freak out if I'm like, oh yeah, I'm about to finish school, but actually I'm just starting because I'm changing paths. And so I told some of my best friends, I was like, hey, since getting out of the hospital, I've had this feeling that I'm supposed to become a nurse. And they're like, oh, that'll probably pass. Feel those feelings, but let them pass because you've been on this path for so long. And, you know, you've told everyone this is what you really, really want. And they're like, you know, you've just been in the hospital, so you've seen all the glamour of it. And I'm like, well, I saw more than the glamour because I was there. And, you know, I was sometimes doing rounds with the nurses, and I'm like, and I knew what other patients, what they were in for, because I was walking around and I would eavesdrop and be like, ooh, that patient's here for this. And they're taking these medications. And I was like, but I was really good at it. And, you know, I could memorize things that I overheard. So finally, my mom and I were on a walk one evening, and I told her, I was like, I'm thinking about becoming a nurse. And she was like, but you're so close. And she's like, are you sure this is what you really want? And I'm like, I have been trying to make this feeling go away since I got out of the hospital. But every night, the urge to become a nurse gets stronger, not more dissipated. And I really think that the reason I spent so long in the hospital is because the universe was trying to tell me that this is what I'm actually supposed to be doing. And so I've decided that I'm finishing a bachelor's in criminal justice because I'm so close to being done. But after that, I'm switching to nursing because I really feel the universe is telling me that that is what I'm supposed to do.
It's my understanding that you were not supposed to spend as much time as you were.
Right.
Post-surgery.
4 days.
15. Yep. Wow. So that really gave you a lot of time to think.
A lot of time to think. And I felt fine for so much of it. It was just that my body wasn't intaking nutrition. You can do laps around the ward. And so they tell you how many laps is a mile, and it's 22 laps to the mile. And I was doing 3 to 4 to 5 miles a day because I was bored. So I was just walking, and you're doing laps around the nurse's station. So you're hearing the nurses talking, you're hearing them rush off to patients, you're passing patients' rooms and hearing what's going on inside. And that's really how I memorized what other patients were there for and what their charts looked like. And I was like, you know, I'm really good at this and I'm into this. So I really felt that I was there for a reason, and the universe was telling me that this is actually what I'm supposed to be doing. And since I've made the decision to switch, it feels like a weight has kind of been lifted off my shoulders, because in criminal justice, I was really going to have to carve out my own path. And not that there's anything wrong with that, but I wasn't sure where to start with that. And now I feel a new defined sense of purpose. And I'm so excited for what nursing is going to bring to the table for me. And so I really felt like the universe really needed to be heard that this is the direction I'm supposed to be going.
Oh my God. Wow. Okay. I did not expect that to even.
Right. And that's what everybody said. They're like, I've never heard you mention nursing. And I'm like, well, we have a lot of nursing friends. And I've always been like, no, I don't want to do nursing. Right off the bat, I've always thought maybe it'll be a second career. If I'm not happy with where my life is at some point, I'll be a nurse. But I'm not supposed to wait for it to be a second career. I know that now.
Thank you so much for listening to episode 82 of Bite Sized Blessings. And I'm so very grateful you all got to meet my neighbor and very good friend, Cameron. Cam has not had an easy life as far as her body is concerned. She has a really rare syndrome called Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, which wasn't diagnosed until her teen years, but which has caused her to have multiple surgeries to fix how it affects her body. So to say that she's resilient would be the understatement of the century. She's been patient and so very strong with the process of fixing all the things that the syndrome affects. And it's really been amazing for me to just see her bravery, witness her strength, see how she goes through life with optimism and with grace. So I really wanted to interview this human being who's been through so much and who's been such a blessing in my life. I need to thank the creators of the music used for this episode, John Bartman, Otis Galloway, Music L Files, and Alexander Nakarada. For complete attribution, please see the Bite Sized Blessings website at bitesizedblessings.com. On the website, you'll find links to other episodes, music, playlists, art, and other fun treasures I think will lift and brighten your day. Thank you for listening, and here's my one request. Be like Cam. Be ever hopeful. No matter what life throws at you, what life gives you, be ever hopeful. Know that there are solutions to your problems, whether they're out in the world or in your heart. Those solutions are out there. Have faith that the universe, that energy loves you and will guide you and take care of you. So this week, have faith and hope. And I'll see you next week for episode 83.